Yes, say hi, hello, and welcome inside a Friday edition of the program. Glad you're with us. Hope you're enjoying the madness. And it's always interesting because I think we get reminded of just how much we get involved in these matchups, how we get involved with the little guy, the Oakland last night getting it done over Kentucky. Those are the stories about this, and then we get to the meat and potatoes next weekend. When we get to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and, you know, so, most often these stories wear down. You get the Oaklands of the world that get the one or two wins. They become a big story during the Sweet 16 action, and then it comes down to who's playing the best at a given time. But there is a common theme that is going on right now in college basketball amongst all of the complaining and the the statements of, well, college basketball and college athletics is different. I will tell you, there is a reason why you see matchups like Oakland over Kentucky. You see a team like Duquesne, who's doing what they're doing as an 11 seed. Teams that you may not be familiar with, just very similar. And you know what? This applies to Ball State men's and women's basketball. It really does. You know, and I'm going to make the case on how the portal can help you. It doesn't change the fact that the portal can also make you retool your team as well. But at the end of the day, the opportunities are there to do a couple of different things in the portal. Because, again, you know, when it comes to March Madness, and I may have said this on the program before, I grew up in a household of an Indiana basketball experienced alum. My mom was on the cheerleader side of that program. She, you know, was the head cheerleader there for 4 years. But I wouldn't necessarily go as far to say we were rabid Indiana fans. Yeah, we watched games. I remember in the 2002 Final Four, I was in spring break in Florida, and we were trying to find a TV to watch the game. But, you know, I was so invested in sports, it wouldn't have really mattered what Indiana team was in it. It just so happened that was the team that was in it. You know, we followed Butler. We'll follow Purdue. I've never really had a strong affiliation to a specific college basketball story. Like, it's not like when I get to the tournament, I'm heartbroken that Indiana didn't make it. I'm heartbroken that Purdue didn't make it because I didn't grow up that way. Now, with the Pacers and the Colts and those sorts of things, I guess our household built ourselves around professional sports a little bit differently. Like, I really want to see Purdue do well. I've told this story before, but there was nobody more classy around here than Matt Painter. It was several years back that his jersey got retired at Delta, and that was after, in the middle of the day, before that game in the evening, that Delta Purdue had gotten beaten in the Champions Classic at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Same day, he comes up, he signs every autograph, he talks to everybody in the arena, and I just was able to grow an immense respect for Matt Painter because it's the things that people don't often see, and that is class personified for Matt Painter. So I've always wanted to see him do well. So, you know, when I watch these games, I truly get to just watch the games, which is a lot of fun. I mean, it really, really is. So I want to get into this because clearly we're in the midst of March Madness right now and everybody's talking about it, but I want to take a different angle. The games are happening right now, and my bracket's actually in pretty decent shape. I don't know if there's anybody out there, unless you had Kentucky winning it all, that should have their bracket be completely destroyed. At this point, I don't feel that way. I feel like you should be in a pretty good spot going to the weekend. That's where I'm at. I've had some hits. I've had some Sweet 16 hits. But for the most part, everything has turned out decently as we head to the weekend here. So Purdue plays at 7 o'clock tonight. and eyes will be on that one for a lot of different reasons. And I'm going to bring up that conversation coming up in a moment. Today on the show, Pat Boylan, Pacers Radio Network 425, he'll join us. Of course, there's a lot of action happening at Gainbridge Fieldhouse because there are games for the NCAA tournament happening there. But clearly, we'll be talking a lot more about the Pacers over the next couple of weeks. Rob Fisher, our analyst on high school broadcasts, will stop by the program coming up at 4:45 today. You can interact with the show at MarkWMUN on Twitter. Cannot take calls today, so hopefully we'll have the opportunity to do that coming up next week in the weeks following. So those that may be calling in to kind of chat here, we cannot take calls on the program today. But if you do want to be a part of the conversation, we can interact on X, Twitter, whatever you call it, at MarkWMUN is where you can do that. So what do teams like Oakland and Duquesne teach us? All you have to do is look at the roster construction. Now, I want to first go to this, and then we'll get to the Oakland-Duquesne aspect and how it can relate for teams like Ball State in the NCAA tournament. Okay, Ball State women's basketball, a marvelous year, ended last night against Belmont in the first round of the WBIT. Tight after the first half, and things just went cold offensively, and it resulted in Belmont getting hot from the field. I said this on the morning show this morning with Steve Lindell, okay? And I get wrapped up in this sometimes as well. So I cannot exactly say, hey, you know, I'm trying to lecture you of how you should feel and how you should look at things, because I get caught up in this as well. We talk about expectations all the time, right? You know, the expectations of a team that has 28 wins, you know, it's kind of like everybody from the outside says, well, Ball State women's basketball has to make the NCAA tournament or it's not seen as a successful season. Well, they fell in the semifinals of the Mid-American Conference tournament last week, and there went their hopes. Again, if the at-large system was ever changed, then, you know, we may be having a different conversation about the conference side of things. And then they are part of the WBIT. And I think this needs to be put in the proper perspective. Some would say, okay, hey, you're playing in the WBIT. Okay, just enjoy yourself. We'll see what happens. You know, you play some games. I truly feel like for the momentum of this program, that moment to play in a tournament regardless of what it is important. And also, we spoke about how this team wants to play together. But also, they describe the monster that they've created for this program and the longevity that they create as they want to be a player for an NCAA tournament bid each and every year. So that moment yesterday, while it wasn't as big as if they would have gotten to the NCAA tournament, obviously, so tournament-wise, is a big moment for the program. It is. And, you know, what you define as success, I'm clearly thinking that yesterday they didn't expect what happened in the second half to occur. But at the end of the day, you can still look at this and say, hey, success from a win standpoint, success from a programmatic standpoint. We do a lot of things where we try to set expectations for the teams externally, when internally they look at it totally differently than people on the outside look. And I will raise my hand and say I'm somebody on the outside. Now, we have the opportunity to talk to coaches all the time and get a little bit of insight on the inside. But what we feel are expectations externally, or you as a fan base, typically is different inside. It really, really is. Now, do they want to make the NCAA tournament? Absolutely. Do they, want to win their conference every year? Absolutely. Those are given. But I guess the focus on this season, you know, people will just say, well, it comes down to if you win your conference or not, if it goes as a success or it's not a success. And that could not be further from the truth. It just couldn't be further from the truth. And again, if you've been involved in sports and those sorts of things, you may have a different perspective on that. But at the end of the day, when you know you have the situation happen in the conference tournament, you got to make the best of the situation. And it was a great year for the program. They got a lot of attention. They won a lot of games. They changed the trajectory for this program. They absolutely did. So I want to put that out there. But I'm going to bring an example of Ball State women's basketball here in a moment, and where the shift in NIL and transfer portal related items actually could benefit a Ball State. Okay, it can benefit a Ball State because I looked at the rosters of Oakland and Duquesne. And I look at those rosters and I say, you know, and actually Western Kentucky's playing right now, and they're playing Marquette. I don't think they will end up winning the game, but they're competing with two dudes that played at Power 5 schools. Christian Lander played at Indiana. Brandon Newman played at Purdue. And they're playing for Western Kentucky, and Western Kentucky wins their conference championship to get to the NCAA tournament and are giving Marquette everything they can handle. Look at that roster. It is littered with experience. That Oakland team that made headlines last night has one underclassman that is playing major minutes for them. Everything else is junior, senior, or graduate student. And a lot of those guys, you can point to the transfer portal. It is amazing when you look at it. Duquesne is structured very similarly in that regard, that they took advantage of putting together an experienced team. You know, I look at Ball State women's basketball, and the addition of Nyla Hampton as a senior in the transfer portal made this season a success. They were already a really good team last year. You had a senior in Nyla Hampton from the transfer portal from another Mid-American Conference school, and look at what you accomplished this year. And this is seemingly becoming the trend in college basketball. It was one and done. How's that working out for Kentucky right now? I know that that's been the majority conversation happening, that the one-and-done era is done. But it's not just that it's done. It's the climate that is created, the opportunity to be experienced. UConn is the master of this. Look at their starting five. It is very different from their national championship team a year ago. And yet they are in the number one overall seed this year, not by mistake. You know, I look at Utah State. Utah State took the NCAA tournament by storm last year, winning a couple of games. I think they got to the Sweet 16, maybe even the Elite Eight. And they have a totally new basketball team. And they have, I think, their highest seed in program history. I think they're an 8 or 9 seed this year. You know, I look at Purdue. Purdue did it a different way. They had experience around Zach Edey. They brought in some freshmen, and this is the year they compete. Now, obviously, a lot of those freshmen are playing big minutes, but they have the Mason Gillises around, the Caleb Firsts around, the Trey Kaufman Wrens around. They went and got Lance Jones in the transfer portal, who's a junior or senior, because they wanted more experience. They didn't go get the five-star recruit out there and play them big minutes. They went and got experience senior guy. And by the way, none of these things are going to take headlines. This isn't the five-star recruit that is going to take headlines and say, oh, he's ready to play right away, because that's what Kentucky does. You know, Indiana's done that a little bit, and, you know, they didn't have a great year. They had the freshman of the year in the Big Ten, 3 out of the last 4 years, something like that, 2 out of the last 3 years. So, again, I look at these stories for the Oaklands, and really this goes for any Mid-American Conference school. You know, Akron was very, very, very senior-heavy this year. They won the league. Now, it didn't work out for them this year in the NCAA tournament, but there is a route now to get experienced and get experienced very, very quickly. I'm going to throw out some names that are out there in the transfer portal right now, and by no means am I saying they're coming to Ball State men's basketball. But there are 3 former players for Ball State men's basketball that are in the transfer portal: Peyton Sparks, Tyler Cochran is in there. And this isn't a player, but this is somebody that has Muncie ties, Reggie Bass, that played at a Mid-American Conference school. I'm not saying any of those guys are coming to Ball State. I'm just saying you look at the collection of talent of those 3 guys that people know around here. They've seen them play. They're in the transfer portal and having played at other schools, and they have the experience. When you put a collection of that talent around some of the base that you already have, you can move up extremely quickly in some of those mid-major conferences. So for all of the tough stuff that the transfer portal provides, and clearly this was a year for Ball State men's basketball that was a little different from the previous year. I remember Michael Lewis saying something his first year about, look at the best teams in the league and look at how many underclassmen are contributing. Not very many. These are upperclassmen-heavy teams. I remember him saying that last year. You know, I think that ultimately that's what you want in this league. That's what you want with teams like Oakland and Duquesne and those that go out there. And it's not a surprise that they go in and they upset. You know, this is the other thing about outside expectations. I was talking to a college basketball coach a couple of weeks ago about this. People think that it's a celebration when a team wins their league and they know they're going to the NCAA tournament and everything else is gravy after that. Did anybody happen to hear the Oakland basketball player last night, Jack Golkey, who hit 10 threes in that game? He literally said it straight. He said, I'm not going to be going to the NBA. A lot of those guys I played tonight at Kentucky are going to go to the NBA and have marvelous careers. But we have the confidence as a team that we can win our way. And for, you know, game after game after game, we can stack up against them regardless of what that individual talent is. He said it way more eloquently than I just said it right there. But that was the gist of the comments. So why not? Why does it happen every year? Because these top programs recruit top-level young talent, as they should. But sometimes they run into an experienced team like this Oakland team that has played together for a while, that has juniors and seniors playing at a high level collectively. Nobody stands out individually, but it's enough to where they become a really tough out because of the experience. Their best player, Trey Townsend from Oakland, averages 16 points per game. They got four guys in double figures, a couple other guys that average 8 to 7 points, and then, you know, they all shoot the ball pretty darn well. And a lot of this was constructed by a coach that has been doing it for 40 years. And you think that it's just a great story and what a great moment and what a great individual moment. Oakland expected to win. So the outside expectations is, oh man, what a ride. What a monumental moment for this program to win that one game. Everybody feels like when these teams make the NCAA tournament that everything else after that is extra. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of these teams are disappointed. I would imagine Akron is disappointed today, feeling as though with an all-league player in Enrique Freeman, Ali scoring 15, 16 a game, they felt like they really could have won that game yesterday. And it's a disappointment that winning the conference championship, getting the NCAA tournament, that's great. That's all the goals. But they had a group that they felt like could win in the NCAA tournament. They didn't get it done. So you might say everything else is gravy. It's not. It is by no means not. It's more than that. And so, you know, while everybody else is celebrating Oakland's sitting there and they're kind of shrugging their shoulders saying, you know what, we expected to be here. We expected to do this. And, you know, it couldn't be more apt as an individual game example of the Kentucky way and the Oakland way, or Oakland representing the mid-majors and Kentucky representing maybe the last connection to the one-and-done era. And who wins? The junior and senior graduate student-laden team. I don't think that's a coincidence, ladies and gentlemen. I don't. And ultimately, if it swings the way that we just described in the first 20 minutes of the show, it benefits teams like Ball State. So for all of the different things the portal provides and the portal frustrates you on, this is what is kind of possible. This can be what it potentially could be if all the right pieces kind of fit into place. It's no longer the deal where you have to get two great recruiting classes together that you get a group of 3, 4, 5, 6 guys and they develop together. No. You got to bring in a couple of freshmen that can play that you can develop, but you have to go get experience. guys that have done it at other levels and bring the right collection together ultimately to do things like Oakland just did. So I think in some ways that should be some optimism for a team like Ball State men's basketball. We'll see. They're in the midst of the transfer portal period right now. So I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how all of this plays out. So a lot more coming on that. Rob Fisher going to join us here in a little bit. Also, we're going to talk with Pat Boyle and Pacers Radio Network. A lot happening at Gainbridge. Pacers are in the midst of a lot of things as well. We'll get to Pat on the other side. This is the Power Talk of Muncie WMUN. Welcome back inside the program, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, brought to you in part by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online, wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road in Muncie and online at wallsfurniture.com. As we're glad to be joined by Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. Downtown Indianapolis, pretty lively with the NCAA tournament games happening. Pat, we're going to talk some Pacers coming up in a moment, but I'm curious because you watch a lot of NBA basketball. I imagine just like everybody else that's a sports fan watching a lot of NCAA basketball right now. In your opinion, with the style of the NBA now and what college basketball is from how teams are constructed, has the NBA had more of an influence on the style of college basketball, or college basketball more of an influence on the style of NBA, or are they two totally separate entities?
Yeah, I guess I would lean that they just kind of feel like two totally separate entities, and, you know, people pick whichever they prefer, and there's good reasons to like the NBA over college basketball, and there's certainly good reasons to like college basketball over the NBA. It's just, you just kind of pick what you like more. For me, what always drew me to the NBA game is just the not only the high level of athleticism, but just the flawless manner in which players are capable of scoring. And I think March Madness is the greatest couple weeks of the sports season. But at the same time, you know, I watch some of these college games that are 20-19 at halftime, and there's no that's a different sport than the NBA is playing, where games are 20-19 sometimes midway through the first quarter. And the Pacers, although haven't been playing in those type of games lately, know that very, very well. I think if there's one carryover, it's probably just the shooting that you've seen. And I'm not talking about guards. We've seen guards at the college level and the pro level be able to hit threes in the deep three for a while, although that certainly has gone up. You see more of it and you see deeper shots and all of that. But I think one thing that really stands out to me is just watching some of the NCAA bigs and their athleticism, their ability to do a whole lot more than what bigs were asked to do 10 to 15 years ago. I think that's probably the thing that jumps out the most to me, is we've seen this progression in the NBA of rarely do you see big plotting NBA centers. You almost never see back to the basket play. And you're seeing, I think, a lot of really skilled fives in the collegiate level as well. And of course, not every collegiate player, in fact, most are not going to be playing in the NBA. But still, that's kind of the way the game has evolved. And that's probably true all the way down to the youth levels.
Well, and the reason I ask that is, and we've had discussions about this over the course of our conversations, the reason maybe that the NBA and college basketball feel like very separate entities now, maybe more than ever, if you go back 15, 20 years ago, I'm sure that there was a little bit more of a correlation, is because of the international influence on the game right now. I mean, you see it in the draft. I mean, just even in the projections for this upcoming year, it might be pick 6 or 7 before we see a college basketball player picks. So obviously the international shift over the last decade, does that have something to do more so with why college basketball and the NBA feel so separate right now?
Yeah, I think that's probably a really good point. And I mean, if you think about, I don't know, if you were to make a list of the top 5-10 NBA players right now, you're talking about a lot of international guys. You're talking about Giannis, and you're talking about Doncic, and you're talking about Jokic. there's just a lot of them in the NBA right now. And as the NBA's influence has gone more from a stateside thing to a national thing, I mean, this isn't just we caught a wave of really good European talent and things are going to go back to how they were in the 80s and the 90s. No, this is here to stay. And I think, and this is nothing new to college basketball, but when you combine that with the fact that, you know, even most of the top college players that are drafted are not necessarily that are drafted earlier are not necessarily household names, because in many cases they've only been in the college game for a year. And you look at, you know, like Kentucky, who lost last night. I haven't looked at their draft prospects, but that's what Coach Cal does. He's the extreme version of what we're talking about here. And those guys weren't really household names, and because they didn't make a deep run in the tournament, they're not people that are players that the average person around the U.S. is going to get to know. And yet, I don't know, wouldn't shock me if one of those guys went top 10 at the same time. So I think that's probably some of the disconnect, too. And I think that's why, in a lot of ways, you're seeing the women's game surge, not necessarily because of anything the men's game has done, but when you look at what the women's game has going on here lately, and I'm talking beyond just Caitlin Clark, I'm talking age, numerous other players, Angel Reese, Cameron Brink. The women's side of the game has players playing in their third and fourth, and in some cases 5 years. And I think because of that, it's allowed some of those players to become household names in ways that the men's players can't, just because of how the leagues are set up.
Yeah, I find it fascinating. It's Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. For the last couple of weeks, obviously, it's been trending for the Indiana Pacers of really starting to look at the standings more and more closely, and it still is very jumbled there. While the Pacers may not be playing their best basketball at the current moment, we'll get to Tyrese Haliburton in a moment, they did improve their position over the last couple of days and have a half-game edge on the sixth spot. And again, the difference between 6 and 7 is play-in or no play-in. So evaluate where the Pacers are at, because there's a lot going on with this team right now, would you say?
There is a lot going on right now, and where the Pacers are at, you know, just from a standings perspective and what that might look like here down the stretch, as you said, they're in six, but they've got two teams nipping at their heels, in fact, a half game back for each of them, and both of those teams, Miami, plays tonight, and the Pacers play tonight as well, and so do the 76ers. And so there's a scenario where if the Pacers were to fall and those teams win, they're eighth by the end of the night. So that's how close things are. Unfortunately, from the Pacers' perspective, the Knicks and the Magic have gotten hot, and because of that, there is a little bit of a drop-off now. You know, previously you were saying 4 through 8 is within a game and a half of each other, or whatever it was for a long time. Well, now there's a 2.5-game separation between the Pacers and the fifth-place Knicks. That's still not that much. You know, you've got 12 games left. You can make up that ground. But it feels like a lot, considering how close the standings have been compact and how tightly contested this race has been here over the last month or so. So from that perspective, you know, your chances of getting 4 or 5, I would say, have dropped. At the same time, you know, Philadelphia here, without Joel Embiid, free fall would be dramatic, but they're clearly a lesser version of their team without him. And everything you keep hearing about them is hopeful that he can return by the end of the regular season. So we're not talking about this week or next week that he's coming back. So I think there's some optimism from the Pacers' perspective if you can keep your head above water here on what's a fairly daunting road trip. The great thing is March Madness is in Indianapolis right now, but that's also meant the Pacers have to get out of town. You don't usually play a 5-game road trip this late in the year, and the Pacers won their first game of it, but it gets much, much harder tonight, starting with Golden State. So I think there's reasonable hope of finishing in the top six. But if it turns out that Orlando and New York kind of run away with 4 and 5, then you're in a 3-team matchup for just one spot, and that math obviously becomes a bit harder.
You want a higher position, clearly, as we described a moment ago. But I'm looking right now, do the Pacers have to win a game, two games to walk their they're almost guaranteed a playoff spot, I guess, is where I'm headed. Obviously, you don't want to be 9 or 10 in the play-in, but that would still put you, quote-unquote, in the playoffs. You want to be in the top six, as we mentioned, but the Pacers are almost guaranteed at least a spot in the play-in because Brooklyn is the team that's 11th right now, and you're 13 games ahead of them. It would obviously be something catastrophic for anything like that to happen.
Yeah, and actually it's impossible because last night the Pacers did clinch at least a spot in the play-in tournament with Brooklyn's loss. So Brooklyn cannot catch Indiana, which means, yes, game 82 is going to end on April 14th, and we know that the Pacers are going to play beyond that. You do have to, if you're in the play-in tournament to technically make the playoffs, you do have to advance into one of those top eight spots. So it's not to say the Pacers have clinched a playoff berth yet, but it is to say that they've clinched at minimum a top 10 spot, and that they'll be playing games beyond that April 14th final game of the regular season. And really, if you look at it, Chicago, it's not inconceivable that they could catch this 6-7-8 group, but it's unlikely. And I don't want to say that the Pacers can't catch 4 or 5 because they still can. However, as of talking right now, 3 weeks left in the season, it seems pretty likely that the Pacers will either be 6, 7, or 8. Their realistic floor really should be 8, unless something, to use your words, catastrophic happened. You should feel good about that. And the positive about that is if you're 7 or 8, while not ideal, you don't want to have to play in the play-in tournament. But if you're 7 or 8, you get 2 games to win 1 to make the playoffs. If you're 9 or 10, you have to win 2 games to make the playoffs. So you get a little bit of a margin for error, but still, if you can get to 6 or, of course, even higher, to me, that's really the goal, to finish in the top 6.
Pat, final one. It's certainly about the Tyrese Haliburton side of things. And what I know when we've looked at Tyrese and when he's playing at his best, it's his playmaking ability and his passing ability. That's always going to be there whether his shot is falling or not. But what is, I think, the bridge of him being a really, really good player to what he's ultimately become as a superstar player is the shot falling, because with the shot falling, man, does that make the dynamic playmaking there. Do you feel like the two are connected, and that's why there has been this attention of shot not falling, playmaking's a little different? How do you feel about this whole situation, and in some ways may have been blown out of proportion in a way?
Well, it's interesting because if you go and you look at this stretch that he had struggled in, the Pacers came out of All-Star break with a game against Detroit, and a lot of people had just said he hasn't been the same guy out of the All-Star break. Well, that's not technically true. He actually had one of his better games of the season in that first game right out of the All-Star break against Detroit. He was magnificent in a home win, and then it was after that the slump started. And if you look at that 12-game span, which coincidentally or coincidentally not, it's why I want to see him be able to put more nights together like he did on Wednesday night, because one of the commonalities that he has in this recent three-week stretch is that when he has played well, it's been against the Pistons, and everybody else he struggled against. But that said, early on, those first maybe 3 or 4 games, you saw his assist numbers down too. But really, you know, what I thought was significant, even when he was struggling over the last couple of weeks, is that those assist numbers, he was still regularly hitting double digits. And, you know, I really just think it is the shot not falling. And maybe some of it is, you know, not being totally 100% with the hamstring. I tend to think it's an accumulation of a few things. I think he got no break over All-Star weekend at all, a time where most players, you know, are able to pause and hit the reset button a little bit. He didn't get a chance to do that at all. The hamstring, you know, has been something that even when healthy to play on, he says he, at least a few weeks ago, he was saying he still feels a little bit, even though he feels like it doesn't hinder his mobility on the floor. And guys just hit slumps, which I think also is coinciding here. And there was some movement at the trade deadline where he's still getting used to his new teammates. So I think it's kind of a little bit of all of those things that have added up to this. He was excellent against Detroit on Wednesday, but you know, the real test will be this weekend. Golden State tonight, the Lakers on Sunday, the Clippers on Monday. We'll see how he does during this 3-game stretch, but I totally agree with your earlier sentiment, which is Look, this guy is going to be maybe the best passer in the NBA, even when he's not shooting well. So he's going to be very valuable. But for him to be that superstar caliber of player, and probably the type of player that the Pacers need with this current iteration of the roster to make some noise come playoff time, I think he's going to have to be close to that level of player that we saw. And so, you know, the Pacers have played a lot better defensively lately, and that's great. And there have been, you know, some positive trends. They've won four straight games on the road, which is significant. Unfortunately, they dropped a couple at home, which limits some of the positive effects of that. But at the end of the day, to me, the biggest thing in all of this and how the regular season ends, how, you know, the potential play-in tournament or playoffs go, is going to come down to, are we seeing the version of Tyrese Halliburton that we saw for months before that injury or not? And at the end of the day, that might determine, you know, how this season looks once we're talking when it's all said and done.
Lots to go. Next couple weeks are going to be very interesting. Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network with us each and every week. Pat, enjoy the weekend. We'll chat with you soon. Thanks for the time, as always.
Thanks, Mark. You too.
That's Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. And to expand on this, I think it's been blown out of proportion a little bit on Tyrese. Now, I will go back to something I said when the injury happened and then it was reported he was going to come back, and obviously he has. You know, I understand the representative type of feel that he felt to the city of Indianapolis, and we don't know if this is just a slump or it's related to the injury. I would imagine in some form or fashion it would be connected. But when you don't get a break and you had an injury that on the surface looked more serious than it ended up being, and you keep pushing forward, there was already a point where he came back from the hamstring, and they won't say it, but they shut him down for 5-6 games after seeing him initially come back. It doesn't feel like he is 100% fully healthy. And here's the other concern that you have going down the stretch. Fighting so hard to be in the top six seeds, there's not really going to be a point to ease him off before you get into the playoffs if that's indeed what he needs. So that's the challenge that you sit here with. Again, I still feel like this team plays so much better against the top-level teams in the Eastern Conference, and the danger of the play-in is the teams like Philadelphia, Miami, Chicago, and Atlanta are the types of teams I would not want the Pacers to play because they haven't fared well against those teams the majority of the season. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. But again, Tyrese played well earlier this week. We'll see if that trend continues. But this goes back, in my opinion, to the All-Star break. Him playing, him being a part of things, and like Pat said, not really having a break. And I do think there's a correlation there, whether he retweaked the injury and that's what's going on, or if he's just going through a slump. It's a lot of basketball. If you even go back to the in-season tournament, that amount of wear and tear, it's a lot. It absolutely is. So, all right, when we come back, we'll close up the week with Rob Fisher, our analyst on high school broadcasts, previewing what is going to be a big week next week for the Wapahani Raiders boys basketball team. We'll talk about that when we come back. A show, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Big thanks to all those of you for joining us all week and all the guests. I've had a busy, busy week. We're brought to you by Sheriff Goslin Roofing, your roofers that are protect your family. Make sure you're doing all you can to protect them. Sheriff Goslin Roofing has been helping families for generations. Remember to call Pete Dahlia or look them up at worryfreeroof.com, as we're glad to be joined by Rob Fisher, our analyst on high school broadcasts. Well, what are you going to do this weekend?
That's a good question. I'll probably do a little watching a little NCAA and
yeah,
maybe a little yard work. That's probably should be number one on the list. But yeah, it's going to be weird not having a ball game to go to.
Yeah. Who do you have winning it all? Did we talk about that this morning?
We did not. I guess probably UConn. I don't know. I'd love to see Purdue do it, though. I really would.
Yeah. That's coming from an Indiana fan, Indiana basketball fan. What's what's going on there?
but a big Matt Painter fan. Sure.
Me too. I was talking about that earlier in the show, just how classy he was the time he was here at Delta. And I know people, I've not heard one negative story about Matt Painter. I mean, he's just outstanding. Yeah. Outstanding. You were at the event last night, Wapahani at Baskin-Robbins here in Muncie, at an autograph night, and neat opportunity.
Oh, it was great. You know, we only live a couple minutes from Baskin-Robbins. I just thought, I'm going to run over there and say hello to the coaching staff and get a feel for the amount of people that were there, and it was packed. Inside was full. There was, when I got there, there were probably 15 to 20 people standing outside, including Matt Luce, and, you know, just kind of, I think, reminiscing and still celebrating, and it was a really, really neat event. And those kids are rock stars right now.
Yeah.
They're got to be enjoying that.
Oh, no question about it. I got to give credit to Steve Wendell this morning, asked me a question that, again, I guess you and I will be talking about next week during the broadcast at some point, because it is a little bit different this year, not having it right after the semi-state, the state championship. You have a week in between, and so you have this kind of middle ground. Would you see that benefiting one team over the other, or is everybody kind of on the same playing field, Brownstown Central and Wapahani in the 2A matchup?
Yeah, I don't think it really favors. I wouldn't think it would favor either. I have to feel like, and I'm guessing Brownstown's probably in the same situation. Like I just mentioned, that these Wapahani kids are just rock stars right now. And, you know, let them enjoy it for a week. I think it's kind of unique that, you know, you get to enjoy it. I know you may get out of the routine and the rhythm that you're used to with that extra week, but this is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and I think it's kind of neat that they get to enjoy it for one full week before they get back to work and start getting ready for the championship game. But, no, I don't think it would favor either side.
Yeah, and for those that don't know Brownstown Central, I did have somebody that grew up near that community and said that they were rivals with Brownstown Central. And this is the first – it's the same deal for Brownstown Central like it is Wapahani. They have not won a boys basketball state championship, and so it is very much the same type of feel down there that it is up here, that this is just you know, one of those Hoosier hysteria type of runs.
Yeah, and it's felt like all season that if things played out the way it looked like it may, that these two teams were going to eventually meet. Both of them had been at the top of the polls all year, and of course Brownstown Central with Binter and Wapahani with Andrews, we were kind of destined to see this. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it goes, and also very, very exciting.
Yeah, it's absolute awesome stuff. It's Rob Fisher, our analyst on High School Broadcast, with us. Before we go one step further, just to kind of give people an idea of this matchup, want to announce this, and Rob already knows this. This isn't breaking news to him, but we will have a special pregame show, 11 o'clock on Saturday next week. Jared Boomer from our studios will be hosting. Rick Johnston and yourself will be on site at Gainbridge Fieldhouse for that first hour, and then I will join you guys at noon as we preview the 2A broadcast, and then we'll get into our normal pregame coverage. But you can expect in that first hour of coverage there to be some interviews with people around the state, people around Selma. There'll be a news component to this, but of course a statewide component of the significance of Wapahani's run here. We're very excited to bring you some extended coverage coming up Saturday at 11 o'clock. Rob, you know, I think this is unique. Brownstown Central and Wapahani have never met. But as you've done some digging, and I have as well, these two programs are very connected because Isaac Andrews and Jack Benner, the star player for Brownstown Central, going to Purdue next year. They played on the same AAU team. Camden Bell was a part of that. I believe Eli Andrews was, and a couple of other players there. Matt Luce and Dave Benter know each other fairly well as well from all those different circles. Like, this is, you know, you feel like these are two teams that know nothing of each other, different parts of the state. They are extremely connected in a lot of ways, which will add to the fun next Saturday.
Yeah, no question about it. I know not only are the players connected, but all those families are connected too. And I know that I was told there's already been a couple of phone calls back and forth wishing each other well before the final week of practice starts. All the yeah. well wishes are taking place now, and then now we get back to work and may the best team win.
Yeah, I think that'll be very interesting because when you have familiarity, can that play out on the floor that way? But we will have extended coverage next week. Rob's going to join me on this show, but Rob and I as well will be a part of the live coverage coming up Saturday at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Can't wait for it. And we've done a little bit of prep, but the prep's really going to take over next week, I would imagine, right?
Yeah. No question about it, but it's all very much worth it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Rob Fisher, the voice you hear. You'll be hearing a lot of us coming up next week. Rob, enjoy. Get some rest. We got a big week ahead. Enjoy your weekend, all right?
Thanks, Mark. Happy birthday, buddy.
I appreciate that. It's Rob Fisher with us on the program right here as we close up a week of shows. Man, what a week. We got a lot to get to next week. Some college basketball, high school basketball, of course, and Colts and Pacers interwoven as well. Hope you all have a great weekend. We are back with you Monday at 4 right here on the Talk of Muncie, the new WM.